You're listening to episode 18 of IDRA Class Notes.
Many of my colleagues across the nation immediately began getting phone calls when the decision was rendered immediately about what do we do with our desegregation plans, and things were thrown out into the public discourse, and it gave people the wrong impression, and I think it really misinformed people because it wasn't clear that the government was actually reaffirming it still has a compelling interest in diversity and that race still must be used narrowly tailored. It wasn't clear that the decisions that had been made a few months before in the post-secondary cases now apply to public schools.
Welcome to the IDRA Class Notes podcast by the Intercultural Development Research Association. I'm Christy Goodman. I first need to let you know that we're about to close the listener survey that's on our website. So if you haven't filled it out yet, please take a minute and share your thoughts with us for a chance to win an Amazon gift certificate. You can also send us an email or leave a comment on our website at any time. One last bit of news is that we've set up an email alert to let you know when a new episode of Class Notes is available. If you're not subscribing to this podcast, this can help you stay up to date. Just go to our website and sign up. It's free, of course. Now, today's episode is quite timely. The U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling in late June regarding desegregation, and the reporting of it has caused quite a bit of confusion. If you are a regular listener to this podcast, you know Dr. Bradley Scott. He's here today to talk about the case and its implications. Bradley directs the IDRA South Central Collaborative for Equity, which is the Equity Assistance Center that's funded by the U.S. Department of Education to serve schools in Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. And of course, he's very active with the other Equity Assistance Centers across the country. They have a network and work together. Bradley has a master's degree in early childhood and elementary education from the University of Texas at San Antonio, and a doctor of philosophy with a concentration in educational administration from the University of Texas at Austin. And he is a national leader in the area of equitable schooling. He's the developer of the 6 goals of educational equity that are being used across the country to help school leaders. And Bradley, I know that since the court ruling just 41 days ago, you've gotten lots of calls from educators. So why is this so confusing? Is desegregation illegal now, and can race matter?
Well, Chrissy, first of all, it's really great to be on this side of the microphone, as it were, talking to you today. As you said, about a very timely issue, and this whole issue of what happened 41 days ago, what was the Supreme Court's ruling, and what are the implications of it for school systems that have desegregation plans? What kind of desegregation plans are we talking about? And what are the points of confusion? So I thought it was important that we spend a few moments trying to clear the air and really giving people a sense of what they need to be doing. This should be of interest to everyone, not only school districts that are currently involved in some aspect or kind of school desegregation activity, but because of a larger issue that the court was dealing with, and that is government's compelling interest in the issue of diversity, which was the larger issue. In answer to the first part of your question, desegregation is still legal. I mean, it is still a requirement for those districts that are currently under court supervision to desegregate. And so nothing has changed with regards to those districts that are under court supervision or some other kind of legal entity, the Department of Justice, something that is occurring as a result of a finding from the Office for Civil Rights through the U.S. Department of Education. Any of those requirements, the decision of the Supreme Court does not affect those districts. The decision that the Supreme Court rendered on the Seattle case and the Jefferson case in Louisville, Kentucky, applies to those school districts that are voluntarily desegregating their school systems.
And these were two cases, but in the Supreme Court ruling, it affected both.
Yeah, it affected both. And in fact, the Supreme Court chose to address the issues of both cases at once.
Okay.
It's not unlike what happened originally in the Brown versus Board of Education case back in 1954, when there were 5 separate cases that was dealing with a common issue. Mm-hmm. And the courts collapsed those 5 cases into one and named that one case Brown alone.
Okay.
So that same sort of thing happened. They didn't give these two cases a single name. Mm-hmm. They simply said, we're going to deal with the issues, the merits of both of these cases at once, okay, since they were essentially the same, mm-hmm, same issues. And both issues had to deal with voluntary desegregation plans, mm-hmm, and the charges that were being leveled by white parents that their children were being discriminated against because of their race being that they were, in fact, white, and that the plans were, in some kind of way, preventing their children from being able to choose the schooling setting of their choice, mm-hmm, because of their race, mm-hmm, in that their race would further add to the isolation, mm-hmm, of white kids from minority kids. So the court chose to respond to both of these cases at once. Now, what happened was, and I think this is where we are in confusion across the nation, it had to do with the reporting that came out in our public media, mm-hmm, that somehow or another, Brown versus the Board of Education had been undone, yeah, by the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court. That is not true. Mm-hmm. The full force of Brown is still in effect. Where Brown said that separate schooling, segregated schooling on the basis of race, mm-hmm, is inherently unequal, mm-hmm, has not been in any way diminished. What has been challenged, and I think there are three things I should say quickly, okay, is first of all, in public schools, K-12, do the principles that were established in Gratz and Grutter, mm-hmm, which were post-secondary,
right,
decisions,
like higher ed, college,
higher ed, mm-hmm, decisions about diversity, about the use of race, mm-hmm, in the decision, do those same principles apply now to public schools? This Supreme Court decision, in effect, says yes, they do. It affirms, first of all, that the government still does have a compelling interest in diversity, mm-hmm, in public school settings, now K-12, mm-hmm, as it does in post-secondary settings. It also reaffirmed that it was important that when race is used, in other words, it clearly affirms that race can be used, mm-hmm, but when race is used, it has to be used in a narrowly tailored way, mm-hmm, not in a general and broad way or a way where only race is used, mm-hmm, as a factor for creating diverse school settings. Mm-hmm. So now, and this was reaffirmed by Supreme Court Justices Kennedy's, mm-hmm, dissenting position, that many alternatives can be used to create a diverse school setting or to support the government's compelling interest in diversity, and race can be one of those factors. It should not necessarily be the first factor. It absolutely cannot be the only factor, mm-hmm, but it should be one of many alternatives for those districts that are choosing to desegregate. Mm-hmm. It should be one of many alternatives that they choose. Mm-hmm. So they might choose race, they might choose economics or class as a reason for desegregating and creating diverse school settings. It could be a matter of geography. It could be a matter of family placement. If a child's family, a sibling is already in a school, they can be assigned to that school. And, you know, so there are many factors and many other ways. And so Justice Kennedy, even though he cited for the purposes of the decision with that part of the Supreme Court that said that race cannot be used to discriminate, mm-hmm, he created an opposing decision, not decision, but statement,
right,
so that it would be clear, one, that he felt that race should still be used and could still be used, but that it must be used, as was established in the post-secondary cases, mm-hmm, in a narrowly tailored way.
I've heard some people refer to this as not a 5-4 case, but a 4-4-1 case because of Kennedy's.
Exactly, Christy, mm-hmm, and that's what it is. So in other words, he took the side of both, mm-hmm, both sides of the decision, because he wanted to protect, first of all, the original intent of Brown versus the Board of Education, mm-hmm, that segregated schooling does not serve the best interests of all, mm-hmm, students, mm-hmm, that racial isolation that is created by segregated schooling serves no one's best interest, and certainly clearly not the government's. And third, that the negative effect on minority and poor kids in segregated schooling is greater is certainly more long-term and more, I guess, deleterious and counterproductive for our own best interest as a nation to have that kind of schooling, particularly where minority kids are alone, and that nothing should, in fact, compromise the integrity of the original Brown ruling.
I was going to say, I mean, it's very interesting what the reactions were right away. I mean, there were some folks saying this is a step backwards, it's a terrible blow, this will result in a period of upheaval, that people are worried that school districts will just give up on trying to desegregate. And Breyer himself said that this is a decision the court and the nation will regret. And yet others were saying that the good thing is that the court affirmed that diversity, there is a compelling interest and the value of diversity. So, I mean, no wonder there's so much confusion.
Exactly, Christy. And many of my colleagues across the nation immediately began getting phone calls when the decision was rendered, immediately, June the 28th of 2007, about what do we do with our desegregation plans, and or now we can get rid of all of this and do something different. And so I just think that all of a sudden, things were thrown out into the public discourse through the media, and it gave people the wrong impression. And I think it really misinformed people because it wasn't clear that the decision was a ruling only for voluntary school desegregation versus some other kind of mandated desegregation. It wasn't clear that the government was actually reaffirming it still has a compelling interest in diversity and that race still must be used narrowly tailored. It wasn't clear that the decisions that had been made a few months before in the post-secondary cases now apply to public schools. So I think we did the community, the national community, a disservice by the way that it was initially reported.
And even with the voluntary plans, it doesn't affect all of them because they weren't all being implemented the way that these were.
Exactly. In other words, there are already districts in our country, one, that have been using other alternatives for creating desegregated settings. Clearly, class and economics has been the most preferred. But in addition to that, even the whole notion of using race narrowly tailored is not new in public school settings either, because for those school districts that have been going after magnet school dollars through federal funding, a part of what they've had to do is to use race narrowly tailored, use race-neutral strategies in order to create magnet school settings which are, in fact, diverse. The notion of this is not new in public schools. It's a practice that many school districts across our country that have federally funded magnet schools have already been working with for years. In fact, as they submit applications, they have to get a civil rights clearance to ensure that they are using race narrowly tailored in order to create a diverse setting, and that they're using other alternatives as well to support the government's compelling interest in diverse school settings. So it's not even new in the pre-K through grade 12 schooling structures of our nation.
It would be wrong to throw that stuff out.
And it's wrong because the government is still taking the position that given the nature of our world, given the nature of our global reality, we must embrace diversity. By the way, it was amazing, Christy, that for the Seattle case, there were more than 50 different groups that submitted amicus briefs talking about the importance of diversity. And how that should not be struck down in any way, shape, or form. So it's amazing the current research that was brought together by all of these different entities that in fact said you cannot get rid of the United States' compelling interest in diversity and that race cannot be entirely factored out. It should be one of many alternatives.
Right. And it's not about being politically correct or goody-two-shoes. This is just a nice thing to do. This is about children's education,
absolutely,
their sociological development and psychological development and their academic achievement. I mean, there's a very recent study that showed about reading achievement being affected by segregation.
Exactly.
So being hindered by that.
And we have known for years, in fact, that those kids who find themselves, particularly minority and poor kids, who are find themselves in segregated settings, racially isolated settings, their academic performance is down, their whole self-image is, in fact, dealt a negative blow. I mean, just a number of different issues. Mm-hmm. And the current research has reaffirmed that. A point you mentioned, Christy, I think is very important, is that in the Seattle case, the lawyers arguing the case talked about the educational benefits of diversity as one of the issues that was important not to be forgotten or not to be gotten rid of. They also talked about the harms of racial isolation as a second important reason that racial isolation does, in fact, produce these and many other kinds of negative effects that we are aware of. But then they also talked about, in a diverse setting, the equal educational opportunities that are created. Kids learn how to deal with people across differing characteristics and social realities. They understand different world views, etc. That all of the benefits of diversity that they affirmed in their presentation before the Supreme Court, I think was hugely important in terms of our public discourse around making sure that we do a better job at listing those benefits that can be derived from diverse schooling settings, and then look for rich examples of those facts or those benefits in action, I think is hugely important. The Jefferson or the Louisville case did argue about the government's compelling interests, and they also talked about how important it was, once again, to use race narrowly. But I think the Seattle case did a better job of outlining what is to be gained by a diverse school setting in terms of meeting the government's compelling interests, ensuring that the negative effects of racial isolation were, in fact, dealt with because of diversity, and also talking about the educational opportunities and benefits to be derived from a diverse school setting. Hugely important in terms of our current public discourse.
And especially given the fact that segregation is worse now.
Right.
It's increasing instead of getting better.
Right. Particularly these are what are called de facto matters of segregation that we are seeing. So that communities, even though natural housing patterns, etc., are creating more and more segregated school settings, communities are going to have to ask themselves the question, what is in our children's best interest? Mm-hmm. Is it better for them to be schooled in a setting that values, embraces, and reflects diversity, or in one that does not? And I'm hoping that they are leaning more toward the side of what the government says is their compelling interest, that diversity is worthwhile. Mm-hmm. And we should try to, as best we possibly can at our local levels, to create diverse learning experiences, culturally relevant pedagogy, multicultural education, ensuring that people have an opportunity to interact with people who are different from themselves, because there are benefits to be derived from that, not only in school, but outside of school, in life, and beyond. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's great. One last legal question. As far as school districts that are under court-ordered plans, should they worry about being challenged, though? I did read about one person saying, well, this gives him ammunition to make a challenge in their district.
Right. I don't think that they have ammunition at all. I think that those districts that are currently under court order, the segregation, simply have a responsibility to continue to respond to the court. The issues are not being challenged in those court-ordered procedures. They simply have an obligation to continue to do whatever they have been directed to do. It is wise, legally, that they do what they have been directed to do in their work with courts and with those who supervise implementation of their existing desegregation plans until they are told to do otherwise.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
And the Equity Assistance Centers are involved in that, in helping districts?
Very much involved.
Okay.
Very much involved in those, as well as those districts that are voluntarily desegregating. They can also call upon the services of the 10 Equity Assistance Centers across the nation. Absolutely.
And those services are free to them because
they come at no cost to them because the centers are federally funded. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Any last words?
Well, Christy, that I would just hope that all of our listeners would pass the word on that, first of all, the government still does have a compelling interest in diversity, that the recent Supreme Court decisions have not struck Brown versus the Board of Education down, and that we can still use race, but use it in a narrowly tailored way, and also look for a race-neutral alternatives to race alone, such as economics and geography, class, etc.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks so much.
And very Chrissy, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to do this. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I think it was very important.
Very pressing issue. We moved it up on our schedule because of all the calls and confusion that we know is out there. And I want to thank our listeners for opening this file and listening. And I want to encourage you to fill out that survey if you're at your computer now. And when this recording is over, please just go over and fill out that survey real quick. Also wanted to point out, we're posting resources on the website, of course, like we do for every episode. And we're adding one related to the last episode. I want to point your attention to on the single-sex education. We're adding a PowerPoint on there that's a very helpful resource to you. So I want to, if you'd already been there, I want you to know that you can go back and get that one. And then one last reminder, all children are valuable, none is expendable. Thanks very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.